Undercover Kid Special is brought to you by Comic Crusaders, the place to get your news, previews, reviews, and interviews. Go to ComicCrusaders.com for all things comic pop culture, for fans, by fans. Also, Geekery Magazine. Remember the awesomeness of Wizard Magazine? Well, the experience is coming back to life with Geekery. Get your geek on at GeekeryMagazine.com. And Big Bad Toy Store. It's big, it's bad. It's the best toy store on the web. Check out the extensive toy line and pre-orders at BigBadToyStore.com. Coming to you from Capes HQ, this is the Undercover Capes RoboCop 30th anniversary special. I am Dodgy in the mix. Along for the ride is fellow comic crusader Jennifer DeRosa. Say hello, Jess. Jennifer, sorry.
Hello.
And with me, straight from the crisis in the Toyverse, we have Bobbo, Effin, Mac. Say hello, Bobbo.
Hi, everyone.
So RoboCop is a science fiction cyberpunk film released in July 17th, 1987, directed by Paul Verhoeven, written by Edward Neumeier and Michael Miner. And there has been two sequels, animated series, TV shows, comics, and toy lines, as well as a 2014 remake. Jennifer, if you could just introduce yourself and your first introduction to RoboCop.
Hi. I'm Jennifer DeRoss, and just to make sure that that's clear. So I'm a comics scholar. I've always loved comics. It's been one of my go-tos my whole life. I'm also a mother of two, and I like gaming and all that lovely stuff, geek all around.
Nice.
The first encounter I had with RoboCop was actually one of those, like, the toys that smells like fireworks. I didn't realize that that was a RoboCop thing, though. My introduction was really kind of weird when it comes to this, because I grew up straight up the mountain from a town that has a current population of about 30. So I just didn't get a lot of exposure to 80s stuff. I didn't see the movie until about 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I really liked it, but the first time I kind of dismissed it, because to me it felt like Die Hard meets Terminator. Not quite as good as either. But then the more I thought about it, and especially my entry point was the Asimov's Laws of Robotics and how that paired up with the Prime Operatives and whatnot. And I went back and I really grew to appreciate it a lot more.
Oh, nice. And you, Bobbo?
Well, the first introduction, just like Jennifer, would have been the Kenner toy line. My father bought me that whole series one. I remember going to Toys R Us, actually, and picking it up. I believe it was on clearance at the time. I didn't get it when it first came out. It's one of my earliest memories as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I guess, I remember seeing the movies on TV as a kid, and I loved it. And then I remember when RoboCop showed up in WCW to help Sting, which is a whole other debacle. And then I remember the TV show. The TV show is the thing that really stands out in my mind during my early childhood, like my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got older, I rewatched RoboCop when it came out on like some two discs DVD. at the time, it was like the ultimate edition of RoboCop. I was
oh,
like,
yes.
All right, I'm in. And then I refell in love with RoboCop again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my first introduction was when I moved from New Zealand to Australia, one of my relatives had the actual VHS cassette. And just looking at the cover, like, just in awe, like, wow, that's such an amazing looking printed cover. But it was R-rated, so I wasn't allowed to watch it until it was on the telly movie. So, like, it was at the 8:30 time slot, 8:30 p.m. time slot. And watching it and being like, wow, that was awesome. But like you said, Bobbo, that 2-disc set actually changed my life because I was watching the M-rated version, not the R-rated version. And when I saw the R-rated version, I was like almost wanted to throw up because it was so different to what I remembered. Because that movie I could remember inside and out, even after, you know, 10 years of not watching it, I could almost remember. I've watched it that many times. It's all part of my DNA. All right, so moving along. So the movie is based in the future in old Detroit, which is in peril. Omni Consumer Products, or OCP, have bought out the police force. This is where we meet Dick Jones and the future of law enforcement, where he builds the Ed 209. Things go pear-shaped. So you guys remember what happened in the scene? I'll turn to you, Jennifer.
What exactly are you looking for? Just like continuing the narrative?
Yeah, just you know, like, you know, Ed 209. Yeah, just Ed 209 is basically was the future of law enforcement, and you know, it just, you know, it messes up and actually kills one of the employees. And basically, from there, it's, you know, the places, you know, think about old Detroit, it's a shithole, you know, and the OCP have bought out the police
force. Much like her, Detroit.
Absolutely. All right. So I'll move along from there. So Bob Morton, who sees the opportunity and, you know, he leads a RoboCop program. And from there, we meet Alex Murphy, a cop who's transferred to the Detroit in the police department. And within a few minutes of his scene in the movie, he meets Lewis, who's his then partner. And within minutes of knowing one another, they have to go and chase a, you know, a bank heist. And, you know, things don't go so well for Alex, but it does go well for RoboCop. So, I'll go to you, Bobbo. If you could just tell us what happened in terms of, you know, what happens to Alex.
What happens to Alex is quite possibly the single, depending on your point of view, greatest or most disturbing killing maybe in film. They get down over there into, like, the shipping warehouse area. They meet the bad guys, and then Murphy gets blown into tiny little chunks.
The tiniest.
Very much so. I mean, that's such a graphic scene. Mm. You feel so uneasy seeing Murphy get killed. You're like, wow. Now, looking back on it, you see what the director was doing and setting everything up, but at the same time, you're like, you really pushed it to the max. I mean, from fingers to limbs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a very brutal scene. Also a very fantastic scene, but very brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And I thought it was really nice the way that we got so many shots from Lewis's perspective. Like, it wasn't just that we were horrified. Like, we were, like, everybody was horrified. And we knew that that was the appropriate response. Like, a lot of places in the movie, there is just kind of like this glorification where you're allowed to kind of revel. But in this moment, we were really meant to be disgusted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But how good was Clarence Boddicker? That he's probably one of the single greatest villains I remember of the late 80s. Just his, you know, if you were to take a snapshot of him, like, smiling on a picture and say, this is going to be your bad guy in a movie, you'd almost laugh because in retrospective, he looks like a like an accountant, or you know, just like an average person. But he really carried that scene. He really carried that, you know, that sinister character. You know, even killing his own teammate. Do you fly, Bobby? You know, like that. All those sorts of scenes. I love that about the character, and I think, you know, that was such a great scene. And you know, it was also good to see that we had a character that we have only known a few minutes, and just the way they carried, you know, Alex's journey in such a short scene, it was truly memorable. So with the death of Alex, you know, he is the, you know, the embodiment of the Robocop program, and you know, Dick Jones's failure becomes Bob Morton's success, and then he's promoted to vice president of OCP. And you know, it was just great to see those scenes of, you know, Robocop hitting the streets of old Detroit and actually, you know, wrecking things up. You know, what are your guys' memories of, you know, seeing Robocop scenes, you know, out in the street, you know, kicking butt and, you know, stopping crime, if you will?
Well, I personally really loved the dick shot. just being honest, yes. I thought that that was such a nice way of showing that he was still empathetically connected to the situation, mm-hmm. but calculated enough to know exactly how to shoot between her skirt to not hit her, but to hit him where it would most count.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a really good way of illustrating who the character is.
Yeah, and it's good to see that a rapist, you know, like you can see that was his agenda, and just to get the worst or the best possible punishment depends on whose perspective that is. But yeah, that was amazing. I love that scene. That's probably one of the most memorable, in my opinion. What about you, Bobo?
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I would have to say, more than anything else, I love seeing RoboCop patrolling the streets. I mean, obviously, the dick getting shot is, I think, on almost everybody's top list. But seeing the effects applied properly, the costume turned out great, all that stuff, at no point while I'm watching this do I think, wow, that's a great costume. I still go, wow, that's RoboCop. And I find that pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's totally true. I think that costume, or that, you know, that outfit stands the test of time. And you're absolutely right, Bobo. You know, that is RoboCop. No question about it. And, you know, you said before about him cruising the streets. The music score in that is truly amazing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Did you know, I watched a documentary about RoboCop leading up to this. Okay. I believe it's on the 2-disc set. They talked about, they spent a long time coming up with that score, and the composer was like, for the scenes that were more robotic, we used like a synthesizer, mm-hmm. but when we got to the human aspect, we went back to classical score type atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very ingenious on both the composer and the director's part to implement that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're absolutely right, because, you know, all in all, he's a robot, but he's also a cop, and, you know, we mustn't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did a good job of blending the two types of music together, too, much like a RoboCop himself, you know?
Mm, definitely.
Absolutely.
Indeed. So Bob Morton, who created RoboCop, is killed by Clarence Boddicker. RoboCop busts a large cocaine warehouse, and Clarence spills blood. Clarence spills the beans that he's been hired by Dick Jones. RoboCop then encounters Dick Jones in the OCP office and meets Ed 209. And you know, he's subsequently saved by Lewis. What do you guys think about that scene where we see RoboCop meet Ed 209 for the very first time?
I loved it. I love seeing him take it down so easily. Like, I know we can look back and be like, oh, that was kind of silly, but there was something about that. Like, RoboCop is just a much superior force. And I just thought that that was a nice way of really upping the stakes in a way that was just glorious and action filled and all of that, instead of having to sit around and talk about how great RoboCop is.
Very much so.
I also like the CGI of ED-209. It's the stop motion effect. It doesn't have the fake feel when you look at a movie made much later using actual computer electronics. You can see that it's sort of like it doesn't fit right. But I think with the stop motion animation, the effects of for ED-209 is much more believable. And you're right, Jen, with the fight scene, you've got RoboCop is a lot smaller, but he's, a lot more resourceful than the stupid ED-209. Although he's a cool looking machine, he lacks the intelligence.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the general durability.
Yes, exactly. At least, he can't take the stairs, right?
I love that scene because his like little robot feet, they're like trying to like step down.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah.
Yeah, that's so true. After the altercation and Dick Jones didn't appreciate the visit by RoboCop and meets with Clarence one last time with the sole objective to kill RoboCop, and him and his gang buy some really powerful guns, and like you had to admit those guns were pretty awesome. They head up to the warehouse for the final encounter. What an ending. I gotta say, what do you guys think?
I keep going first, you go first, Bo.
The ending scene is very fitting. I mean, it's full of action. You get your just rewards there. And I really love, I just love the way that whole fight battle kind of played out right at early on. And I love the character progression of these bad guys as they keep getting worse and worse and worse as it keeps going on.
Agreed, all across the board. Like, by the end of the movie, you're so Team RoboCop, it doesn't even matter what could have happened. Like, you just want him to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know, the memorable scenes for me was, that dude who was driving the little panel wagon, he crashes into the acid, and then he comes out disfigured. Help me! That was kind of fun. I just remembered that, and his buddy's like, get away from me, and then he gets hit by the car and he explodes. That was memorable. Yeah.
So, oh yeah, the ladder scene is well worth the price of admission.
I mean, if you think about it, you wouldn't see that in a current film. Like, almost like a Splatterhouse type movie.
It has those moments, and it has the same like the social impact punch every time it happens. I mean, the toxic waste is a major problem for this future Detroit city with all the robotics and everywhere. Like, it makes sense. Like, on the surface, it is such a silly movie, but the like I said, the more I thought about it, like, the more touches of cyberpunk and classic sci-fi, and like, it really, it has a lot of those deep meanings.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. When I rewatched that documentary, the director was like, RoboCop to me is like an American Jesus, because he has a gun, and that is the embodiment of America and their guns, which I found fascinating because he was a foreigner directing a movie about America, and you see that a lot of times with foreign directors on American films. They have such a different viewpoint of our culture, of American culture.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So I don't know where I was really going with this, but I'll keep going with it. RoboCop himself, for me, is a great study on American culture. And I dare say that RoboCop still holds up in looking at American culture as it did when it was released.
Absolutely. And those commercials are probably one of my favorite parts of the movie, honestly.
What's the one with the board game? Like, it's like Nukem or something? Or like...
Yeah, that's true.
Prince Duke and, feeding into the Cold War paranoia and all of that, which, of course, I'm not sure how that timeline fits in, but it's a really fun little nod. Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, and then my favorite commercial, I'd buy that for $1.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best. Whenever I hear that, you know exactly where it came from. But I'm actually surprised it hasn't been like reused or anything like that, because that was so genius. Because it's almost like you know, every time you switch the TV on, he'd be on. You know what I mean? It was it was amazing, and you know, I think that tapped into the the social class of the day, you know, of consumerism, that, you know, everything was about buying the latest car. And what about the car name? SUX. I thought that was hilarious. The SUX 3000.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even catch that.
That car sucks. You know what I mean? It's just those little elements that, you know, and it was a great break in the scene too. Like, if after you saw something quite tragic, it would open up with that news article, you know, which was, yeah, it was fun to see. And, you know, and you can see the conversations by the news media is very transparent to a degree, but you could kind of see this is where the future was going, which is, you know, they could have just made it, you know, mainstream, and it probably wouldn't be as good. But I think those little elements gave it that, you know, that cult following.
I agree. You know what I just thought of too?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of now know why this is kind of, I'm going on a tangent here, but it's going to connect.
Definitely. Go ahead.
I kind of realize why I like Grand Theft Auto so much, because of all those parodies and that excessive violence. That is exactly what RoboCop is.
Mm.
RoboCop is an analysis on the culture and everything. Done very funny and very heavily with violence and all that stuff. So I just realized that now. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I've also played Grand Theft Auto, and you just listen to the things going on in the radio when you steal the car, and it's...
Yeah, the radio is the best part. Like, the music is cool, but the actual commentary...
Yes. Definitely. But yeah, so so the fight scene all happens, and you know, RoboCop gets a one-up against Clarence and his gang, and then he heads back to OCP headquarters to kill Dick Jones. And my most memorable part of that is the old man approaching him and saying, "What's your name, son?" And he says, "Murphy."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that tops it off. That's a big tick from me.
That was my favorite part too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So with the with the success of the first RoboCop movie, they did release a sequel, and the sequel is RoboCop 2, which was written by Frank Miller, whom we're very familiar with in the comic book world. It was directed by Irvin Kershner, as we all know, was the director of The Empire Strikes Back, you know, by far the best Star Wars movie ever made. So Kane is the antagonist in this film. That he's a user of the drug named Nuke, which you inject into your neck, which RoboCop is trying to eradicate. Kane eventually becomes RoboCop 2, and his reliance to Nuke is his downfall. Did you guys actually see RoboCop 2? Were you excited about it?
I actually have a lot more memories of RoboCop 2, mostly that stand out because it was always on TV. It seemed like RoboCop 2 always got more TV playtime than RoboCop 1, at least for me.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, my fondest memory, sorry, Jen, was the fact that he actually got to fight someone a little bit more his size, and him climbing on the back of it was pretty cool. That was what I enjoyed about it.
Yeah, I liked that part too. I didn't like it as much as the first one, obviously. I actually hadn't watched it at all until about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just a little, like, all of the, what I really loved about the first one with the little nuances and whatnot were just so explicitly over the top. Like, the metaphor for nuke and all, like, but, you know, that's classic Frank Miller, and I have to admit, I kind of love it.
Nice.
I didn't hate it as much as it seems a lot of people did.
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema as a kid, and I really enjoyed it because it was like, I never got to see the first one in the cinema, but seeing the second one, I was truly, truly, truly happy. And, just learning that Frank Miller had actually wrote it, because it was before I actually knew who Frank Miller was. And seeing him in the movie named Frank was pretty cool as well. It was a nice little add-on. But also hearing that Irvin Kershner directed it, I think, if you think about comparing Star Wars to The Empire Strikes Back, I kind of wished it was a Empire Strikes Back level of film. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think there was probably too many cooks in the kitchen involved with RoboCop 2. I think you had two people going in two different directions between the director and Frank Miller. I think, honestly, when you look back on the film, it's part of the reason that it doesn't work as well as the first one. And it's hard to top something that was as good as RoboCop with the vision that that director had on it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're basically just recycling stuff. Mm-hmm. But trying to do your own thing, and that's a lot of problem with sophomore movies, is they usually don't hit the home run that you expect them to do.
Agreed, but I did really like the fact that it was a child that RoboCop had to fight because he couldn't actually fight. I think that was a really important thing because it goes into that programming again. Like, is a child automatically implied innocent? Is taking that child down something that RoboCop could actually like convince himself as the right thing to do? I wish that would have been played with more.
Yeah, it's a really good point because that kid did take down Lewis, as you remember from the beginning of the film, you know, and you're absolutely right because RoboCop he wouldn't shoot her. Shoot him, sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no. I feel like there was potential there. Like, I can't just dismiss it. I just wish that it had, I don't know, come to fruition better.
Yeah, that's definitely something that got lost in the shuffle, it seems like. But I will say I did always want to punch that little kid right in the face. Yeah, good face punch.
Just save me a cheek, okay?
Deal.
Deal.
He's like probably like 40 now. Like,
I know. Right.
In his late 30s.
That's so unfair. Why does time have to fly so fast? But no, it was. I enjoyed it, but I just wish that I think it was too many stories in one movie. I think if they had the opportunity to take some of the bits out, I think it would have been a lot easier on the a lot easier viewing. So moving along, in 1992, Frank Miller, again, he actually wrote RoboCop versus the Terminator in 1992 with art by one of my all-time favorite artists, Walt Simonson, published by Dark Horse Comics. In a different time in the world of the Terminator, Skynet create higher intelligent Terminators, which has been proven difficult for the humans to encounter. So a young human, flies back to travel to the past to take on, to go to old Detroit, to take on the robot that is given these Terminators higher IQ, and that is being RoboCop. So RoboCop is acting in the current times or in the future as like a master mold. So he is actually controlling all the Terminators. You know, it's his IQ, you know, his intellect is actually controlling them, making them smarter and harder to kill. So this young lady, her name is Flo, and you know, she goes to kill RoboCop, I beg your pardon, but she is also followed by three Terminators, and RoboCop actually kills the three Terminators, so it changes Flo's knowledge of what she's encountering, because she's thinking she's taking on a dude that's a killer or is evil, but he's not. I think, you know, basically from reading the book, he was actually kidnapped by the Terminators against his own will, if you know what I mean. So I really enjoyed this book because of the fact that these Terminators in the book, and I know we're like spanning off a little bit to the Terminators, but we had children that were Terminators and dogs, which you never seen in the film. So I think that was a great little story there. Did you guys read the book at all or read the story?
I loved it. Came across a couple, like the two middle ones back. I think I read those after The Dark Knight.
Good.
Because again, I really like the hyperbolicness of Frank Miller's work.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a lot of slack, and I think that there's a lot of problems, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it was really confusing reading just the middle two, but it kind of made sense going back and seeing the whole thing. I have to say that's by far my favorite RoboCop.
Oh, nice.
I just think that the characterization is nailed. I think that the actions that he takes are completely logical for the character. As you said, the artwork is just outstanding. But there's a replication that's going on that I think is particularly effective. I love the little nods to the movies. I thought that if there was a sequel that compared to the first movie, it's that.
Oh, yeah. I so wish that was a movie, to be honest. It's amazing.
I thought it was interesting too to have the paper dolls, because it's that again tying it back to children, which I'm not sure why all the adults thought that it was okay to like expose children to all of that at such a young age, but I mean that's part of the RoboCop aesthetic at this point.
And you're totally right about the nods to the movies, because it was so enjoyable, but it takes a little bit further. It takes RoboCop a little bit deeper, you know, going into his own world and, you know, meeting up with his wife, and then, you know, eventually Flo's there because, you know, Flo gets killed, that's why she's there. And, you know, there's just those little moments, you know, that you kind of wish that were in the movie, but, you know, as you imagine, you know, timing, and you can't really span off too much in a movie, but in a comic book you can do that, which I really enjoy. And you know, and you know, you're right about, you know, the flack that Frank Miller receives. I think he does a lot more good than he's done bad, but I just think the bad is sort of exaggerated or amplified a lot more. But definitely I love it. I definitely loved it. And moving along, in 1993, RoboCop 3 was released, directed by Fred Decker, written by Frank Miller. OCP is suffering from bankruptcy and is sold to a Japanese firm, and the development of Delta City depends on brutal firsts of physically removing people from their homes, and RoboCop is there to try to save the day. Did you guys watch RoboCop 3?
I have a confession to make.
Go ahead, Bobo.
I've never been able to get through RoboCop 3. I've tried so many times. I fall asleep, or I get bored, or I try to come back to it, and then I always catch the opening, and then I catch the end. Yeah, I never get the middle part of the storyline. And RoboCop 3, for me, I've never been. I don't know why. It's like my Achilles heel. It's the thing that's just stops me right in my tracks.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it, and it's enjoyable the same way that, like, Johnny Mnemonic is and whatnot. Like, there's something about, like, just the gloriously bad cyberpunk that, like, and honestly, I think the movie would have been okay, like, if it continued... I don't know. I think some of it is the too many cooks thing from the second one. If they had chopped off everything to do with the flying RoboCop, oh my god, that was awful. But like taking it down to the actual street level and what is RoboCop's purpose to serve and protect, and the company that he was supposed to be helping in order to do that was so corrupt that he had to reject them. Mm-hmm. In order to fulfill his programming. And so I think that that's a storyline that I think could have really went somewhere. I really enjoyed the mixed, so we have a mixed race family, we have a woman in color that's in power. Like, this is stuff that you really only get in cyberpunk and Afrofuturism, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If I had only seen the first half an hour of that movie, I probably would have loved it.
That is so true, because, you know, I just felt like the movie was a victim of, you know, it's not the director or the writer's fault, but I think it's the actual production company, because they wanted to make this a PG-13 movie. Like, how could you make a RoboCop movie PG-13? Like, seriously. Seriously.
We can touch on that in the later parts of the story.
Absolutely. But yeah, it was like, it's horrible. I mean, you know, sometimes you can sort of see the actors when they say the word shit or son of a bitch, you can kind of see that they're saying it in a way that they shouldn't be saying it, because it's supposed to be a PG-13 movie. But oh man, and you know, the only time you really see someone get killed was when they killed off Lewis, which was, I think, was a shame. A real shame. Yeah.
I loved her, and that was the human connection for Murphy at that point. He didn't really have any connection anywhere else, and so to remove that, I thought that was a terrible choice.
I think it's worse that she was like 3 weeks away from retirement before she got. No, I'm just kidding.
But in the movie, the scene I did like the most was when the guy goes into the. You know, to the diner, and he goes to, you know, saying this is a stick up, and there's all cops in the diner. I thought that was hilarious. That was pretty good. But also on the same scene is when someone says, you know, I think it was one of the lead detectives or cops, and he's saying like, Lewis, it's you, and you just see her with the newspaper and the blowing the bubble gum. She looked like a boss. Like, she looked like a boss in that. That was awesome. You know, you're like, yes, Lewis. You know what I mean? Like. She paved the way.
Agreed. I loved her.
Yeah. But yeah, the movie was just a major letdown. Even that Japanese cyborg, I was a bit like going, you know, that was quite interesting, but again, it just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, because I keep falling asleep.
It's probably good for you, Bobo. I wish I could. Absolutely. Oh boy. And I mean, as you know, after that movie was released, they released a TV series. Again, a completely different actor. Totally different cast. Nothing from the original movies was in it, and I don't want to go on about it because I haven't watched it. I can't watch it. Like, you know, like, it's like you've got something great, and then you're forced to watch something crap. That's what it was like, you know, going from RoboCop 3 onwards, was forcing you to watch something crap.
I get all about that TV show.
Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah, I was glued to that sucker as a kid. That stuff would come on in syndication on Saturday mornings, and I was glued. I was a sucker, a horrible sucker. I remember the one where Roddy Piper shows up, and he, like, tricks Commander Cash into doing I remember a whole bunch of different. That show's really horrible. It's just got off.
I might have to watch that episode.
I know.
Check this out. Tried to rewatch it again, and I had the RoboCop 3 syndrome. I was like, I got to go do something else.
Better catch some Z's. So in 2014, there was a remake of RoboCop, directed by Jose Padilla, starring Joe Kinnaman as RoboCop, also starring Gary Oldman, Jackie Earle Haley, Michael Keaton, Abby Cornish, and Samuel Jackson. Did you guys watch that movie? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
That would be nobody. Nobody wants to even comment on it. Nobody's like, I don't want to talk about that. It was a dark day in my life.
I don't even know what they were thinking, honestly.
They weren't. Yeah. He unloaded a Brinks truck and was like, here, make this reboot. Everybody involved was like, yeah, okay, we'll do that. That'll be fun. Oh, yeah, God. I don't know if we'd use the word fun, but you guys go at it. Have a good day.
At least with the first three RoboCops, there's some kind of something that I can enjoy. With that one, I'm just...
Well, my favorite part was in the beginning, you had more than one Ed 209. And I mean, just seeing them look similar to the original was kind of cool.
Those did look good. I'll give them that.
Yeah, and that was pretty awesome. I was excited from that and seeing Jackie or Haley in it. But I don't know, just after the movie ended, I didn't get a whole lot out of it. I think I got a lot just seeing the Ed 209s in the beginning. You know, they were pretty cool. Like, Ed 209 is still one of my favorite robots. If I ever saw a model in the toy shop, I'd be like, my eyes would be glued to it. My wallet would say something else, but I'd definitely be eyeing it, that's for sure. I really enjoy seeing him. Yeah, but the movie just, it wasn't memorable. You had one hand that was bare and the other one was robotic. It's kind of, I didn't like that very much. And also the poor attempt at redoing the TV, the TV ads during the movie with Samuel Jackson. I mean, gosh, like, just make a RoboCop versus Terminator movie and let that be the project, not anything else. I'm sorry, I really did not like it. But yeah, I mean,
I didn't like it either. It's okay. This is the place to be for people who didn't like that movie.
Absolutely. thank you.
We meet on Wednesdays.
Reboot Haters Anonymous. Absolutely. Do yourself a favor and check in. But talking video games, did you guys ever play any RoboCop video games? I know RoboCop versus Terminator was out in the early 90s. Did you guys ever check that out?
The NES one? I had that one.
Oh, wow.
I had that one. And how would you remember being horrible at it.
Now I had the Terminator game on the Super Nintendo, but I don't think I ever had any RoboCop games.
That Terminator game's horrible. I'm sorry. Oh, she opened the door. That Terminator, I never got past that opening stage. I never got past it. And I played hours there. I know this is a RoboCop review, but screw that game. That game could go to hell.
We'll check you in next week, Bobbo, for the for Game Haters Anonymous. It's all right. You're in a
actually, if you have any games that you hate right now, just go ahead and send your game hate mail to josh@undercovercapes.com. It'd be a fantastic opportunity. Hasn't received any hate mail in a while. Great opportunity, folks. Go check it out.
Yes, absolutely. But speaking of the game, I've got the action figures, and this might be along your avenue, Bobbo. RoboCop versus Terminator action figures by NECA. Have you had a look at those?
I haven't. I have Ed 209 and I have the RoboCop.
Wow.
That they redid. Those are the only two RoboCop figures I have still. I think I may have some at home. Mm-hmm. Walked away, but like from the old Kenner line, but
oh, wow.
I only have those two and they're right next to me.
Oh, nice. I had the original Todd McFarlane RoboCop figure from the early 2000s. My only gripe with that, although it was a great looking figure, was a lack of articulation, and secondly, the gun was too short. You know, his
McFarlane toys for you. They make great little statues.
But the gun, that's my major gripe. The gun was too short.
But it's the important to have the gun right.
Yeah,
like, that's
exactly.
The important piece.
It is.
Just one job. That's all you had. Make the gun the right size. So now that we've covered everything in terms of RoboCop, where do you see it in the
Wasn't there that cartoon series?
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever get it?
I didn't really watch too much of it. I watched like a couple episodes. By then I was RoboCop out.
Was that bad, was it?
I don't know if it was bad or not. I don't have any good memories of it. So I can't say that it's bad because I don't have any bad memories. I just know by that time, me and RoboCop were going on different trains. He was waving to me. He was like, bye, dirtbag. And I was bye. Bye, RoboCop.
See you later, creep.
One thing we haven't talked about is RoboCop Road Trip.
Oh.
Well, please go on.
Please explain.
So Road Trip was another comic series, and I thought that they did a really good job of bringing out some of those nuances from the first one and the second one. So we've got, like, old grannies that are shooting up RoboCop, so we have that same sort of he can't shoot people that he is coded as seeing innocent, so it really makes you question who are seen as innocent in society. And it makes the explicit, like, corporate buyout sort of thing a little more on the forefront, instead of just having all the commercials and everything. In this case, it's literally the corporations that are buying Detroit. So I thought that was a really cool way of working around the RoboCop stuff. And I think that they did a good job with the character. And again, we've got these robot dogs. Like, what is up with robot dogs?
Everybody wants a robot dog. Come on now.
I know, right? They can live forever.
Those are scary robot dogs.
They sound very intimidating. They sound like something gangsters would have.
Exactly.
Did even you read that series?
No, this is the first time I heard about it. You said
likewise.
RoboCop Road Trip. My mind hit two things. I was like, that sounds like an MTV show. Or two, that sounds like that stupid Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, Out of the Shell tour.
Oh, no.
Disney on Ice.
So where can we find more out about it, Jennifer?
When did it come out? I think it was 2012 through Dynamite.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Do you know if they released it as a trade by chance, or did it just get an issue release?
I'm not sure if they ever put it in a compilation or anything.
Mm-hmm. We'll put the notes on the end of the show. So if those who are listening want to go check it out, just check out the show notes and we'll have it there for you. But you know what? Talking about corporations buyouts, so that's one of the things that really it didn't mean anything to me as a child. But upon seeing, just recently how OCP bought out the police department, if you think about how many companies are selling, ammunition to the, the armies abroad who are serving, are just being sold, guns and bullets just by third-party providers, third-party people. And
an issue.
Yeah, it definitely is an issue. And I think the movie just pointed that out with subconsciously, it was very subtle in its, in its message. But yeah, it's very, very meaningful. And, it was just, like, for me, it was just like, wow, yeah, like, companies actually do that today. And, and RoboCop probably didn't mean to do that, but they just wanted to be a little bit, far right, you know, far right in their approach to, you know, governmental issues and things like that, you know, and it was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Agreed.
But I think it goes to say that we all agree, RoboCop, the first movie, 1987, happy 30th anniversary, is by far the best movie of RoboCop ever made. Although it's...
Oh, yeah. I disagree. I disagree. The third what? One is. You can put me to sleep.
Mark it as a sleeping aid. There you go.
I know. There's a big budget in that. I mean, I see potential.
The first movie, absolutely outstanding.
Well, on RoboCop 3, you know, they could make a lot of money from people who are suffering from insomnia. Great idea, Bobo.
Well, infomercials of just RoboCop 3 late at night.
Oh, there we go.
I can just see it now. Having problems sleeping? Well, why take a pill? Go ahead and try RoboCop 3. That's right, available on DVD and Blu-ray. And if you act now, we'll throw in that crappy TV series for you, too.
Absolutely free.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Good call. Good call. That was brilliant.
This is too much.
That was a great throw-in, Jen. That was awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
Oh, you kill me.
RoboCop 1, absolutely. By far. So, like I said, I know we didn't touch upon it earlier, but I do really love that boardroom scene and where everything was crappy. Mm. And I just love how the old man and what's-his-face are just, all those people were...
Nonchalant about the horrible murder. Like, they're just like, well, scrap that, I guess. Not even worried.
Yeah, and I think...
RoboCop 2, like when the robot takes off its head, that cracked me up.
Yeah, that was
It's like, all I can't prototypes. Do this. I can't be a robot. I'm taking off my head.
Yeah, they're because they're fallen cops that just can't deal with it. And that's why they have to use Kane, you know, who's a drug addict or drug user as well as a crime boss. So it was a great, sort of a difference maker. Yeah, a great concept. And it was very different. So I really appreciated the originality of that. But I don't know. I think less of knowing Kane would have actually made the movie a lot better, I think, in terms of introducing RoboCop 2, because we knew who Kane was. So we had literally two villains who were the same person. And I think Kane had more time on the screen than RoboCop 2 had. So kind of bugged me a little bit, but, you know. All in all...
Well, because Kane's so familiar.
Yeah. But, I mean, it wasn't a terrible movie, but it could have been a lot better.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But RoboCop 3, no apologies.
Hey, you guys quit hating on RoboCop 3.
We already established we could.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The RoboCop 3 is our cash cow, folks.
Absolutely. But, you know, one thing I did like about, you know, the original RoboCop movie, we touched a bit on before, is about the villains. I think the villains, although they were, you know, they weren't known actors, but they were known characters. Like Clarence Boddicker, when I saw him in that 70s show, my first reaction was, that's Clarence Boddicker. Like, wow, he's still acting. You know, that was exciting for me because he was, you know, one of my all-time favorite villains. And just seeing his cockiness, you know, his hatred of cops, you know, and everything he was, every line he read out was done as a natural bastard. He was a bastard throughout the entire movie, which I loved. You know, even when he was pulled up by the cops.
He really did seem to revel in that part.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun. And, you know, I'm just sad that he didn't get any more roles or, like, any more notable roles after that, because I think he was better than Peter Weller, to be honest with you. Peter Weller was a great RoboCop, don't get me wrong, but in terms of acting and just being out there, he was great. He was friggin' phenomenal.
Agreed.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us for our special episode of RoboCop, the 30th anniversary. Please check us out on undercovercapes.com as well as comiccrusaders.com for all things comic pop culture for fans. Sorry, by fans, for fans. Get that one right. Thank you for joining us, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
Nice meeting you, Jennifer.
Nice to meet you, too. Both of you.
Thank you. And thanks, Bobbo.
Anytime, big man. Bam!
Bam! Just one thing before you go, Bobbo. What have you got next for Crisis in the Toyverse?
Next on Crisis in the Toyverse, this week we're going to finish up my DC run with the Vixen and Supergirl from DC Collectibles, and then I move into the Diamond Select Ghostbusters Last Wave to complete the diorama. And then after that, hopefully we have Masters of the Universe Classics in my hands.
Yeah.
Woo! That's awesome.
And then by the time August hits, I should have my NECA Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles San Diego Comic-Con set.
Nice. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Check us out on undercovercapes.com for all the other exciting podcasts, as well as our YouTube channel for my man here, Bobbo F and Max, Crisis in the Toyverse.
Bam!
We bid you farewell. Bye.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
The greatest superheroes come to the Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Terrificon, Connecticut's number one Comic-Con, returns. Meet actors from the Game of Thrones, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Stranger Things. Plus a special tribute to TV's Adam West, Batman. Artists from Marvel and DC Comics, the Batmobile, the Batboat, even the Batcopter. It's Terrificon, Connecticut's Terrific Comic-Con, Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Tickets at the Mohegan Sun box office or Ticketmaster.com. See more at Terrificon.com.